All right, and welcome back to the lunch break. This is your host, Christopher Key.
And your side pal,
imaginary friend. Hey, guys.
All right, so now that you're nice and hooked into this wacky show, it is officially December 1st. I have busted out the Christmas lights. I have busted out the Christmas tree. I've busted my lips putting up the Christmas trees and the Christmas lights. But anyways, I am already sick of these songs, the Christmas jingles, as you like to call them. Rudolph is just an annoying little dirtbag, and he has a humongous herpes on his nose. And yeah, it's possible for reindeers to get herpes on their nose. And I am breaking out the sweaters. However, I live in South Florida, and it is 85 degrees outside. But I still have to rock my sweaters because the sweaters look awesome. They look so cool, and I love wearing them. They're comfortable. I go to this place, Tommy Bahama. It's like an old man's clothing store. I don't wear any of the Hawaiian shirts, but they have the most comfortable pants and t-shirts and sweaters ever. And they're a little bit on the pricey side, but that's no big deal because I'm just a baller. Nah, I'm just kidding. So let's see. We're going to be talking about my addiction, and I'm going to be skipping around a little bit back and forth. It started when I was about 12 or 13 is when I started drinking, and from there on it was just a every single weekend type of thing. I would wait for my cousins to come over and say, hey, let's go get some alcohol. And I remember my cousin, who was about 3 years older than me, saying, no man, we drank last weekend, let's just hang out. And I was like, yeah, whatever. And I remember going into my mom's liquor cabinet and just constantly taking her vodka and then filling it back up with water. And my mom is an alcoholic, so I'm sure she knew that it was replaced with water. And she never said anything to me. She actually, when I was 16, she told me, as long as you're at the home and the house drinking, I don't care. I just don't want you to drink and drive or drink and go out anywhere. And the first time I ever drank was actually the first night I ever smoked a cigarette as well. And the first cigarette I smoked was a Marlboro Red, right? It's like the harshest that you can get. I think my first drink was MD 2020 or MD 4040, whatever it's called. And I drank the entire bottle, and I wasn't drunk at all. And I was sitting in a green chair, and all of a sudden the green chair and I just fell over, and I stood up and I was just wasted. It was pretty crazy. And then as time went by, I remember when my mom went down the street to my grandma's house, I took like 10 shots of vodka. And my mom came back home, and 10 shots of vodka when I was like 13, 14 at this time, it was nothing to me. And I remember my sister's boyfriend who would come over, and we would just do shots all night. And I remember at the age of 13, 14, at max 15, I was taking 23 shots of vodka, at one single time. And I would still be awake. I didn't even get blackout drunk. Of course, I did get blackout drunk every once in a while. By the time I was 16 years old, I was up to drinking a half gallon of Captain Morgan on a nightly basis. I would wake up around 12 or 1, and I would just drink and drink and drink. And I didn't exactly wake up and start drinking. I actually woke up at 1, and then around 5 or 6 I would start drinking, and that half gallon would be gone by 11 o'clock at night. And then I would just pass out. But I would, usually I was into marijuana at that time, by that time, and I started smoking weed. And then I remember getting these alcohol withdrawals. When I got the alcohol withdrawals, I didn't know what they were. So I constantly had these massive headaches and I felt bad. So I went to the doctors And the doctors prescribed me, a 16-year-old kid at the time, they prescribed me some hydrocodone. And I started to take hydrocodone. And the minute that I put a hydrocodone into my body, I was addicted. It makes you feel better than you ever have felt before. It's just a state of pure ecstasy. It gives you tons of energy. You're all of a sudden very social, you know, and it gives you everything that you're missing. You always have a hole inside you. Most addicts and alcoholics, they have a hole inside of them. And whatever is missing, I mean, you know, the opiates just fill that hole. And they gave me everything. You know, they gave me friends. They gave me energy. And I thought that this was the answer. And I didn't realize that down the road, it was actually not giving me everything. It was going to be taking everything away from me. So as time went on, I wound up having these headaches all the time, and it was because of opiate withdrawal. And I would just constantly go back and forth to any doctor I could and tell them I had massive headaches. I would go to the dentist, I would get teeth pulled just so that they could give me some more painkillers at the age of 16. I mean, I was never at school. You know, I even had a Universal Studios season pass, so I was never at school, and I always was getting high, and I was always at Universal Studios, just skipping school, having fun with all my, you know, friends at the time. So, and by the way, I'm skipping tons of crazy stuff, and I may go back to it if I remember it. So now, at my 18-year-old, I'm an 18-year-old, and I move in with my friend Eric, who we thought we were these cool badass people. We call each other the Bash Brothers because we were just bullies, and you know, we got into fights, and you know, his dad owned like an MMA gym, and we would go train there every once in a while. So we just thought we were badass, but you know, inside I know that I'm not, and I was actually, thank God I was taught that lesson that I am not a badass. Later down the road, which is good. And I firmly believe that if, you know, everyone in the world should get their ass kicked at least one time, because it lets you know that there's no reason to be an asshole, and it lets you know that people can fuck you up and you need to treat people with respect. And it also fits you in on the food chain, you know? All of a sudden, you know, you thought you were Johnny, you know, Kick-Ass, and you're not really Johnny Kick-Ass because a bigger motherfucker kicked your ass. And it fits in on the food chain. So you figure out, hey, maybe fighting is not my thing. You know, maybe I'm better at history. Maybe I'm better at painting, you know, anything. And so Eric and I moved in together into a little two-bedroom apartment. And I never worked. I mean, you know, I manipulated my father and told him I was working. I actually did work at Burlington Coat Factory for a little bit. You know, they gave me a job. And I was working there a little bit at the beginning of the apartment. And I was able to, you know, get a paycheck. But all that money went straight to drugs. And I would just tell my father, you know, oh, I had to buy work clothes or this or that. You know, I had to spend money on gas. You know, I would just lie all the time. Also, at this time, I mean, I had one of the finest chicks, and I was just, she would come over to my apartment all the time, and we'd smoke, and I would just nail this chick, okay? And I'm not just saying, you know, like a fine chick, I'm talking about like a white girl who's has got a thin waist with just a ass like you've never seen, man, just a perfect ass, not like one of those fat asses, but just one of those perfect, plump, juicy, sticking out on a skinny girl, like, grab it with two hands just on one cheek ass, and we would fuck all the time, and man, you know, I wish I remembered more of that, but I don't remember most of it, because I was always high with this girl. Most of my sexual experiences, I was always high. I don't remember most of them. I am 29 now. I think I've only slept with like 7 people. And that's not a lot for a guy. you know, and I've never been like a player, even though, you know, I tried to be when I was in high school. You know, I was dating the homecoming queen while dating the quarterback's girlfriend, you know, while dating this other random girl all at the same time, actually, and another girl who, you know, I was just very mean to. And I ruined this poor girl's life for 2 years in high school. And I still haven't been able to make amends to her yet. And I hope that one day I'll be able to have the opportunity to make amends to this girl. And including her mother. But, so we got into this apartment. And in the apartment, I was just doing drugs all the time. And my buddy Eric, he was an electrician. He was doing good with himself. He was bringing home a paycheck. He was paying his rent. And he had this girl that was coming over. She was a bitch. She didn't like me. All they did was argue and have sex. I mean, that's literally all they did. It was a very toxic relationship. She actually works at a strip club now as a stripper. But I was taking a bunch of Xanax at this time. Xanax, opiates, and marijuana and alcohol, and I never shot up any heroin. I never shot up any pills or anything like that. I would literally just bite them in half and eat them, or I would snort them. So I moved in with Eric and I started doing drugs. And one night, my friend, you know, I'm putting quotation marks up in the air because I thought these people were my friends, but they weren't. They were just toxic for me. And this guy Javier comes over and we start getting so messed up that next thing you know, it is about 10 o'clock at night, and we have been just pillaging all, I don't know if pillaging is the right word, but we were just, you know, terrorizing my apartment community by stealing, being real loud. We would go into cars all over the place, and we would check to see if the door was unlocked. And if the door was unlocked, then we would just take all the tools, you know, the garage door openers. We did this all through Waterford. And I remember that he had a, like, humongous magnum, is it? No, not a magnum. Revolver. He had a huge revolver that he had brought over to my house. And one of the cars that we were robbing from, this kid Javier fell asleep in the car. And when he fell asleep in the car, I was watching him from a distance. I was sitting in my truck. And I look over and I see the owner of the vehicle coming up to the window. And I see Javier sleeping in the car. And the guy knocks on his car window, and Javier points the gun right at him. And I was in a Xanax blackout, but I remember that part because some, you know, traumatic events you just remember. And I remember just thinking, oh shit, he's gonna fucking kill him. And Javier got out the car, he kept him at gunpoint, backed away from the car, and he got into my truck and we zoomed off. And Javier shot 2 rounds out the window. So we get back to my apartment complex, and Javier takes his gun out again. And by this time, we have our whole house is filled with just credit cards, bikes, tools, garage door openers. I mean, you name it, cameras, pills, alcohol, everything we could find in cars that we could take, we took it. Okay, and I had a truck at the time, so we would just put all this stuff in the back of my truck, and we just unloaded it all at my house. And Javier took his pistol out again, and his revolver, and he said, "No, man, it's not loaded anymore," and he points it right at his hand, and I smack his hand out the way, and he pulls the trigger, and there was actually a little bit of blood and a cut in between his thumb and his index finger from where he had shot the bullet. And the bullet went down in the ground, it hit the ground, and it ricocheted up and hit the apartment right above us. And the bullet went through their TV, and I heard them scream upstairs. And they came down, they came downstairs and asked us what was going on, and we said nothing, I don't know what happened. So about 5 minutes, 10 minutes later, a police officer shows up at my door, and he starts banging on my door, open the fucking door, and I'm telling Javier, hide everything, so the cops are just, like, trying to break down my door, and I look through the peephole, and I see that they're both fully armed with two huge, like, badass shotguns, so Javier hides everything, and they come inside, and they put us immediately on the ground face down, and they put these shotguns to our heads, and I look over at Javier, and Javier's just flipping out, like, fuck you, motherfuckers, and, you know, just going crazy, and I'm like, fuck, this guy's gonna get me killed, because even back then, I knew, just comply with the cops, or you're gonna get shot, and they started hitting him with the gun, the barrel of the gun, they started hitting him in the face with it. And Javier was bleeding, he was black and blue, and the cops came in, and they said, we know you have a gun in here. They searched my entire house with all that stolen shit in my house, and they couldn't find anything. And the gun was just sitting on top of a glass table that was in my room, right behind the computer screen. You know, one of those big tube screens, because that's what we had back then. And I can't believe they didn't find it, but they didn't find it. So, the cops left. They didn't arrest us. They didn't do anything. So, this goes on. We're doing every freaking drug you can imagine. And all of a sudden, I wake up around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So, I wake up, and there is a master detective in front of me. I knew that because he told me I'm a master detective. And he looked like Gil Grissom off CSI Vegas, and he had this trench coat on, and I just won't ever forget that guy, because he said, hey, are you here? And my dad was sitting next to me. Eric was moving out of the apartment with his dad, and they had a big U-Haul backed up into the doorway, just moving everything out fast, because I actually had broke his window the night before, too, hit it with a bat or something, and the cop starts questioning me. I don't remember much about the questioning. He said, we're going to have to get your statement. And then he took me to jail. And when he took me to jail and booked me, he booked me for 4 counts of grand theft in the second degree. That's like a 5 or 10 year sentence apiece, okay? And 4 counts of burglary of a conveyance in the second degree, which is also another 10, 15 years. And this is, and 3 counts of petty theft. So this is, I mean, this is the end all. I literally could have gone to prison for the rest of my life. So I had to stay in jail for about 2 weeks before my dad gathered enough money to bond me out, because the bond was very expensive, and he had to put his house up for sale, and or not for sale, he had to put his house down as payment for it. So my dad finally bonds me out of jail. And when he bonds me out of jail, okay, and before, I apologize, going back just a little bit, before I'd already got a DUI, so I was already on pretrial diversion for the DUI, so I violated that. So now I'm sitting in jail with the DUI violation and the, all the 8, 9, 10, 11, 11 counts of other things, and I was shitting bricks and withdrawing in jail. It was horrible. So I get out, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later, I forget, and I have to go and speak to a public defender. Okay, I tried killing myself. I tried slitting my wrist. It didn't work. And so I remember going and seeing, because I was looking at life in prison, you know? So we go and see this public defender that they appointed me. My public defender looks at my case, and she said, you're looking at a minimum of 35, 40 years. And I just, even right now, I mean, I just remember my heart just sinking, and I knew this was going to be it, and I'm doomed. So we found out that there was a conflict of interest with Javier's attorney and my attorney. So, because I was blaming Javier, Javier was blaming me. And so I got a free lawyer out of it due to a conflict of interest. And the state paid for the lawyer. And my lawyer said, oh, I know the judge on this case, and my dad did an amazing amount of work to, you know, free me and clear my name. And about a year and a half went by before I actually went to the finalization of all the charges. And the judge says, we're going to let you off with two petty thefts in this second degree and a year of probation. What? Okay, that was God. God saved me. And obviously they gave me that. They couldn't give my... they couldn't give Javier anything more. But he was sitting in jail the whole time. He was in jail for like a year and a half because he couldn't afford the bail. And... So now I'm on a year probation for 8 felonies and 3 misdemeanors. And now I'm getting away with 2 misdemeanors. And a year of probation, what... I should have learned right then and there, but hell no, I didn't. So, I'm on probation now for DUI, and I'm on probation for 2 counts of petty theft. While I'm on probation, I'm just bouncing from house to house, you know, doing anything I can for the next score, the next dose of drugs. I joined a fight club for a little bit. You know, I thought I was badass. You know, I would win some, I'd lose some. It, you know, I refereed some fights, some street fights, you know, out back. I stole, you know, copper wire. I would tell my dad that, you know, people are going to kill me if I don't get money. You know, because I owe them money and they're going to come find me and kill me. You know, they got a gun to my head, send me money. I mean, it was just horrible, horrible manipulation. And this wasn't me, guys. This was the addict. And the addict can do crazy things for to get drugs. They'll do anything and everything to get drugs. And that's what this country has to realize. So I went from house to house just looking on Craigslist and just moving in with all these people. My dad would help me move in. He'd help pay the first month's rent. And I would just steal everything from every single house that I went to. And I just kept getting high. So I kept violating probation. So I kept getting let off with just reinstation of probation, blah, 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 pay some fines, go to classes. And they just kept fucking letting me off. You know, possession of weapons, all this stuff I went to jail for. And I eventually was at a sports authority with Javier again, believe it or not. And we were taking Xanax. That is like the worst of all drugs. And when I took the Xanax, you tend to want to steal things when you're on Xanax. So we went to Sports Authority and we both put a pair of shoes on and we walked out. And a security guard caught us. I don't know why we didn't run, but the security guard caught us. And he's like, yeah, you guys got to come back in, blah, blah, blah. And they called the cops on us. And I remember Javier, I think he tried running, because when they brought him back in, I remember for some reason, his dick was hanging out of his pants. I don't know what happened, where that was, but I remember that. And the cops showed up, and they arrested us and took us to jail. So they gave me another count of petty theft. And it was a violation of the DUI. And it was a violation of the petty theft probation. So I actually got 3 charges when I stole those 1 pair of shoes. And this is where I was sentenced to 10 months in jail. And I sat in jail for 10 months over stealing a pair of shoes and the violations of probation for the things I've done in the past. This was horrible. Jail is horrible. It's not like, you know, jail's different than prison. You know, you don't really get raped in jail, especially if you're in, like, the trustee program like I was. You know, that's not an issue. But jail's horrible. They didn't even have ketchup in the jail I went to. You know, you can't smoke, you can't drink, you can't do anything. We all know, jail is just a horrible, horrible place. So I did 10 months and I got out, and the day that I got out, I had my dealer waiting on me, and that's when I found out about Oxy 30s, Roxy's, and the Oxy 80s. And the day I got out of jail, I had a huge keg party, and I was taking tons of pills, and man, I was fucked up. And I remember leaving. This was the day I got out of jail, okay? And but since I did time, I'm no longer on probation. I'm no longer on anything. I'm free and clear, and because I did the time, and it solved all of it and paid all the fines. And I wind up hitting, on the way home from the party, I wind up hitting the car going into my neighborhood. I was living with my sister at the time. So I hit this guy's car, and I just took off, okay? And I hit so many cars, and I took off so many times, I didn't think it was going to catch up to me. And this car, you know, doesn't chase me, just pulls in, and I go back to my house later. And all of a sudden, I hear a knock at the door, and it's a cop. And the cop says, "Hey, did you drive that green truck?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "All right." And he puts me in handcuffs. And he said, "You did a hit and run." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "Have you been drinking or using anything?" I said, "Well, when I got home, I started drinking." So he couldn't give me the DUI because he couldn't prove it. And I told him I took some sleeping medication. So he said, "Do you know who you hit?" And I said, "No, I don't." And he said, "You hit your neighbor." And I look over at my neighbor, and that's his car just sitting right next door. I mean, that's how oblivious I was. I couldn't tell you what year it was. I was so fucked up all the time. And he brought me over to the neighbor's house, and the neighbor decided not to press charges, and they let me go. I mean, there was so... I went in and out of jail just for probation violations, you know, everything. Because when I was on those two probations, every time I'd get a new charge, I'd have to go to jail three times. You know, one for the probation for the DUI, one for the violation of probation for the petty thefts, and then whatever the new charge was. So every time I went to jail, I would have to go three times for one charge. So I was in and out of jail 23 times. And this was all by the time I was even 23, okay? In and out of jail that many times. And the longest I did was 10 and a half months. And, you know, I didn't learn my lesson for so long. And I don't understand, you know, that's why it's called insanity. You do the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And, I mean, I just kept getting the same results all the time, but I was still chasing the high nonstop. So this went on for years, and it went all the way up until I was 23 years old. And this was just back and forth in between people's houses, stealing everything, my dad cleaning up all my mess and just continuing to give me money. You know, he was a very, very bad enabler, but if it wasn't for him, I'd be dead. If it wasn't for him, I'd be in prison for the rest of my life. He loves me a lot, and that's why he hated seeing me the way I was. And so I'm 23 years old, and I'm, you know, at this time I'm getting not only drugs off the street, but I'm also going through the pill mills and getting like 210 Oxy 30s. They're prescribing this to me, you know, because I had made up a fake MRI and all this stuff. And they were just giving me massive amounts of pills. And I would, you know, deal them with this guy, Dominic. And him and I are very bad for each other, just like Javier. And this guy, Dominic, was over at my house. We were, you know, hanging out or partying, whatever you want to call it. And he left his wallet. And his wallet had like $400 in it. And I needed some drugs. So I took $20 out of his wallet, and he calls me, and he's like, "Hey, man, you got my wallet?" And I'm like, "Oh, no, I don't know where it is, you know?" And so I call him, and I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I found it right here." And he comes to my house to pick it up, and he notices $20 are missing. And that's when this guy, Dom, literally just beat the shit out of me. And when he beat the shit out of me, I was never more awake than I am now. I had like two black eyes, a bloody nose. I mean, he did a good thing for me. I needed to get my ass kicked, and he did it very well. I thought he did it so well, I thought I was going to die. And that made me realize I wasn't Billy Badass anymore. You know, I wasn't Johnny Strongarm. And that's when I was just at an all-time low. I mean, I looked like trash. I just, you know, was so skinny. I was like 130 pounds. And I was just constantly sick after years and years of using. So I went onto the highway. And I remember just thinking, man, I should just crash, you know, my car right into the oncoming traffic. And I thought, oh, I don't want to hurt anybody. You know, what if there's a kid in the car or something? So I go off to the shoulder and I get out of my car. And when I get out of my car, I just stand on the side of the road thinking to myself, you know, I don't want to live anymore. So I wait for the biggest truck to come. And for some reason, there wasn't any semi trucks on the highway at that time. So I was waiting there for a while, and all of a sudden I see a semi truck coming, and it's about three steps to just hop in front of them and just end all of this pain and misery, and the pain and misery I was causing other people. So I take one step, no regrets. I take two steps. It's almost like a feeling of peace. You know, finally all this is going to be over. And right as I was about to take the third step, my grandpa called me. And my grandpa also struggled with addiction in the past. And he said, hey Chris, what are you doing? And my grandpa never calls me. It was really weird. And I said, well, we were very honest with each other. I said, Grandpa, I'm about to kill myself. And he knew I was serious. And he said, what the fuck would you do that for? And I was like, I can't do this anymore. And he said, Chris, do you have a lighter on you? And I was like, yeah, of course. You know, I'm fucking smoking two packs of Newports a day. And he said, Chris, take that lighter out your pocket and flick it and see if you can hold that fire. See how long you can hold the fire underneath your finger. So I was like, what? I don't have nothing to fucking lose. So I did it. And I said, I couldn't do it for 1 second. And he said, Chris, imagine that pain over your entire body for all eternity. And I took a step back and I realized that he was talking about hell. And I didn't want to have to live in even more pain and even more agony. So my dad calls me a little bit later and he said, Chris, I found a place where you can get help. You can get treatment. And it's in South Florida. So about a week later, okay, because I'm still doing drugs all the way up until a week, and they didn't have a detox place at the place I went to at the time, so my dad stayed inside of a hotel room with me for about 5 days, where I was just cold turkey, which is dangerous, by the way, but, you know, cold turkey off alcohol, off opiates, off Xanax, you know, off everything, and I will always remember that because it was the most difficult thing that I ever had to do, even up to this point. And I finally went into treatment. And I stayed at this place for 98 days, and my dad paid for all of it. And man, it was amazing. I mean, I was doing Bible study groups, I was making friends, you know, I've never even read the Bible, and God was just speaking through me and using me as, you know, as I don't know what the word is, but he was using me, and I was just, you know, teaching the Bible. And I had never read the Bible in my life, but here I was preaching it. And I got heavily involved in church, and I started to become sober. I started to get my sanity back. And when I did that, I knew that this was the path for me. I had to, you know, follow up with this treatment. I had to treat it like it was cancer. I had to treat it like it was a disease that could kill me, because it is. So I constantly went to treatment for 98 days. I did everything I possibly could because I knew that I used to try very hard for drugs, so I at least need to put forth half the effort to try and get the help. And I did. And I then went to a halfway house for about a year and 2 months after that. So I did almost a year and a half of just straight treatment. And the place that I went to treatment at, they actually gave me a job 6 months after me being clean. So really 3 months after me getting out of that treatment center. And I mean, I still work at this place to this day. It's been almost 5 years now. I actually just picked up my 5 years celebration at work. So I've been at this company ever since then. And this place, you know, is just amazing. It's not just a job to me, it's a career now. I remember all the people that helped me, and I want to give that back, and I want to help them now. So that's pretty much what I do now. Now I'm going to get into a more diverse conversation on the next episode, and I am going to explain how amazing my life is now on my next episode. But I'm also going to go back on a couple of details that I missed, and just to, you know, let you guys know of all the other crazy shit that I did. So stay tuned for next one. If you guys have any questions for me, just drop a comment and I'll answer it. And I appreciate it if you are listening. And I know this is just a startup podcast and I don't have many followers right now, but it feels good just to even say this stuff to myself. You know, I don't necessarily need a million followers immediately. It's just good to kind of keep like my own personal diary. So I appreciate everyone's time. And trust me, you're going to want to listen to the next episode because my life is phenomenal now. It's amazing. You know, I give back, I help others, and I have a very nice lifestyle. And I want to share that with you to let you know that recovery is possible. And even though you've done all these horrible things, you're not a bad person. So join us next time on the lunch break. Ba-doo, ba-doo, ba-doo. All right, take it easy, guys. Thank you.